Welcome in to Locked On Knicks, and it is the fifth day of the week, so you know what that means. It is Fan Friday. We talked with you guys last night on the Locker Room app, Gavin, and I think we came up with some really great things and had probably one of our more robust locker rooms since we started doing this.
Yeah, Alex, this was probably the most fun I've had. I was really impressed with everyone who came on. Made really good points, led to some great conversation. We went like 55 minutes, and it felt like 10. It literally flew by for me. But we get into a bunch of interesting topics. We start off just you and I, Alex, talking about the playoff picture, where the Knicks fit into it after their recent losing stretch. Then we talk about Derrick Rose's minutes for a little bit, how Tibbs is overplaying him, particularly coming off of COVID and why that's hurting both Rose and the Knicks. Then we get into end-of-game situations, why the Knicks' offense hasn't quite been creative enough, why Julius Randle has faltered down the stretch, and why it kind of seems like the Knicks ignore RJ Barrett. All that and more right now on this Part 1 episode of Fan Friday.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Anthony for three. Bang! That one goes down. Back up off the glass. It's good.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome into Locked On Knicks. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. I am Alex Wolf. I'm editor-in-chief of Knicks site The Strickland, which you can find at thestrick.land. He's Gavin Shaw, play-by-play announcer by day, podcaster by night. This is Locked On Knicks Fan Friday. This episode is also sort of brought to you by Locker Room, which is the fantastic app on the iOS store that you can download and join us every week for Fan Friday, like today's episode. We did this last night at 5:30. Typically, we're doing these on Thursdays or Fridays to talk to all you guys on the Locker Room app, see what's grinding your gears, what your concerns are, what your thoughts are about the Knicks. So we get into a lot of great stuff today. I won't hold us back any longer. Without further ado, this is Locked On Knicks Fan Friday.
All right, let's get it started then. Welcome to Fan Friday on a Thursday. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf. You guys already know if you're in the room, but for everyone listening in podcast form, this is Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. And we are here to answer your questions. So whenever you guys want to speak, feel free to pop up. But Alex, I thought we could start up by talking about the Eastern Conference playoff race, because it's becoming an increasingly dicey proposition for the Knicks, who looked like they were in pretty good position as of maybe five or six games ago before this 1-4 stretch of avoiding the play-in tournament altogether, securing a top six seed, especially with the injuries in Charlotte, LaMelo Ball going out. And despite Atlanta's win streak, Boston and Miami have seemed to fail to take advantage of the fact that they have complete teams now. But that ambulance you're hearing in the background, maybe for the Knicks playoff hopes, Alex, because or at least their avoidance of the play-in hopes, because it's looking like an increasingly dire proposition, especially after last night losing that tiebreaker with the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I don't know. It is getting a little concerning. I don't know that I think that the Knicks can end up quite as bad as, say, like the Bulls or the Raptors, because it doesn't seem like either of those two teams are really making huge strides here. But it is a lingering fear in the back of my mind. And it would just be kind of annoying to have to even be in the play-in games to begin with, after, you know, looking like they could have reasonably finished in the top five or six potentially had some of these games gone the other way. Hopefully it doesn't come down to the end of the season where we're just kind of looking at this like, oh man, had the Knicks won, like, I mean, I mentioned on the show last night, if they had won, you know, all these games in their last like six of their last eight losses were by a combined 14 points, And if they'd won all those, you know, they would literally be sitting at the four seed just behind the Bucks right now with 31 wins instead of, you know, in the eight seed with 25 wins and, you know, kind of clinging for dear life, hanging behind Miami and Boston and now Atlanta and like somehow Charlotte, who seems to be able to absorb their injuries better than the Knicks at this point, apparently. It's very frustrating. It probably doesn't help that the Knicks play in the toughest division, maybe in basketball at this point. Are we willing to call the Atlantic division the toughest division in basketball? I mean, with the Nets, the Sixers, the Celtics, the Knicks, and the Raptors, who, despite being, you know, pretty bad by their standards this year, are still, you know, in the fight for the final play-in spot. I would argue that the Knicks are playing, you know, it shows in their strength of schedule and all that, but it's mostly because, I mean, the Atlantic division is just stupidly good this year. And it looks like it's probably going to be pretty good for years to come. So I guess we should kind of get used to this scrapping and clawing for playoff position.
Yeah. And it's a situation where I talked about this last night on the podcast, but you have to maintain some perspective, both on why the Knicks are having these close game struggles and just how much it matters in the aggregate. And I've continually argued, like, what we're seeing from RJ Barrett right now, that should be the story more so than the playoff race. But because this team, I mean, established a standard of being pretty competitive and looking like they could achieve maybe even a little bit more than they have, people are holding them to it. And there's also nothing wrong with that.
All right, we're going to take our first break. Just a reminder, today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. And if you can believe it, it got even deliciouser last year. They added so many new flavors, and they just keep adding more flavors this year. You know, you can always find caramel brownie, cookies and cream, lemon almond cheesecake, another one of my favorites, coconut almond, tastes just like an almond joy, toffee almond, mint brownie, so many fantastic flavors of Built Bar. They are all covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, and honestly, tastes just like a candy bar. The best part, though, is that you can eat it. You feel like you're eating a candy bar, but you don't have to deal with all that candy bar guilt afterwards. That's because Built Bars are good for you. They are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. For example, let's go through my two favorite bars here. Coconut almond has 18 grams of protein compared to just 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. Cookies and cream has a whopping 17 grams of protein against just 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 4 grams of net carbs. I challenge you to find any protein bar out there that A, has that great of a ratio of calories to protein, but B, tastes even close to as good as Built Bars do. You will not find it. I'll save you some time. So if you want to order some for yourself, go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, and we're back to Fan Friday. But if you want to get some other sports news other than just our great Knicks discussion, get all of the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast every day. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Again, that's the Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Great new app for all your podcasts, including all of your Locked On favorites. And without further ado, we will now get back into Fan Friday.
All right, Omar, I'm gonna bring you up now. He put in a request to speak a few minutes ago. Omar Youssef joining us for, I think, the fourth time now on Fan Friday. Omar, how's it going? What do you want to talk about?
What's going on? I just wanted to talk about really mainly just the state of the team, what they're doing exactly rotation-wise between Rose and Peyton. I actually think that they're kind of missing the boat on how they're using Rose, as it's been commonly claimed, is that Rose gets tired at the end of these games. I actually think he gets tired at the end of his first stint in the first half. He usually comes in with about 5 minutes left in the first quarter, and then Thibs will run him out there anywhere from 12 to 14 minutes. I think he kind of needs to play him in those shorter bursts, 5-6 minute stretches. And that's how they can actually fit him as a starter above Elf. I was wondering if you guys had noticed that too, that you really actually see Rose begin to fade in those last couple of minutes of his first half.
Yeah, I think to some degree, maybe. You know, he's, I think just in general, yeah, like to your point, you have to just figure out a way where you can manage him a little better, particularly because I don't even know if this is like a career full of injuries sort of thing for Rose so much as a coming back from COVID thing for Rose. Because, I mean, he said it hit him really hard. A number of people that aren't pro athletes have, you know, said that it's really impaired their lung function for months after getting COVID. So it's possible that Rose is still feeling those effects, and it's leading to him having less wind to go for those long stretches. Unfortunately, it's just sort of the Tibbs way to like put these guys in for really long stretches at a time instead of staggering people with shorter stints. And I'll never fully understand why he believes that platoon swapping is like the best possible way to do this, where over the course of like a 3-4 minute overlap, you know, you between like the end of the first quarter and beginning of the second, that's when you just swap in a completely different 5-man unit. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, to your point, it would be a better idea to kind of like stagger Rose in there and then like stagger Quickly for a bit, stagger Peyton even. I mean, you know, I don't, my distaste for him is, I feel like, well known if you guys listen to the show, but yeah, I don't think that he's completely useless as like a spot player. To come in for a few minutes per game and play, particularly against other teams' benches. But, you know, it's just one of those deals, yeah.
It's just because we just have a common theme on most nights where the start of each half and the end of each half is a struggle.
Yeah, I think...
And there's a common denominator.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Omar. And I think that there are a couple of different factors there. I guess circling back to Alex's point, I think part of Tibbs's logic is that when you have a younger team, sometimes it's helpful to young players to consistently play with the same guys over and over again. So for someone like Quickly, like he doesn't have to think on the fly, like where is Obi going to be on this play versus like where's Julius going to be on this play? Like he kind of just gets to really figure out Obi Toppin. But to some extent, I especially at this point in the season, I feel like that's not necessarily giving these guys enough credit. And though maybe there's something to that, like developing consistency with the same guys on your team, it obviously really limits your flexibility in terms of who you're playing opponent wise a specific night. And I know Tibbs's mentality is probably like, well, let's make them adjust to us, but that doesn't work when some guys on your second unit, like Cough, Obi Toppin, Cough, like there's nothing to adjust to because they don't really do anything well yet. And to your point, it really, really hurts Quickly, because I mean, earlier in the season, Alex, you were talking about this on the pod yesterday, Tibbs was a lot better about when Quickly was just rolling. He would keep him out there, and even sometimes when he wasn't playing well, he would just let him fight through it. And last night, when Quickly really got it going, he orchestrated that run. It was basically an 8-0 run by himself. He just got plucked out right after and never really got a chance to come back in and build any kind of rhythm. And with Rose, it's just so hit or miss with him. And this is, I got to talk to the Locked On Pistons host when they first made the trade. And he was kind of warning me and saying, you know what, some nights it's going to look really, really good. He's going to be getting to the lane. He's going to be making smart passes. He's going to be playing unselfishly. He's going to be intense on defense. And then other nights, he's just going to fall in love with that mid-range a little bit. And I think to what you guys are saying, that there's a correlation there between where his wind is at and whether or not he's getting to the rim and finishing, or whether he's just falling in love with that jumper. Because the big, oft underrated thing with Rose is the main reason he's not the guy he was early in his career, despite still having a whole lot of athleticism and a little bit more guile and being a smart, talented player, is because he doesn't get to the free throw line. And early in his career, he lived at the free throw line. And because of that, to be efficient, he either has to be hitting his threes or he has to be getting to the rim. And when he's a little bit tired and a little bit more willing to settle, the line, or I guess like the like line of demarcation, kind of he kind of goes below that, right? He's no longer a positive player. While Quickly, anytime he's out there, he's always going to bring that spacing, if nothing else. And it's just a definitive quality from game to game that you can't necessarily count on from Rose, and certainly not Elf, because they don't have that one thing in their skill set that will be there on a night-to-night basis. But Omar, before we send you out, any final thoughts on all that?
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's clear that Thibs wants Rose to finish each half, and he basically plays him till he tires out, whether if it's the first half or the second half, and then he brings Elf back in with 3-4 minutes to the end of each half. I just think it's just he has to reconfigure when he's getting his minutes, and getting him make sure he gets the first 5-6 of each half, and then if you want to sprinkle a couple extra on top of that, sure. But having him come in 6-minute mark of the first quarter, and then come in late into the first, and then finish up in the end of the second quarter, he's still playing with both first unit and second unit. So I don't even know if it's about the actual lineups. And especially at the end of games, like having Elf off balls, Randall ISOs is just completely useless. They need to have, I think Thibs will probably switch it up, and I hope he does.
Yep. I'm with that. Omar, thanks for joining us. I hope he does make those changes ultimately. And, I'm sure we'll talk to you next Fan Friday, because you've been nice enough to join everyone.
All right, guys, we'll be back in just a sec, but first I wanted to tell you about another one of our favorite sponsors. It's BetOnline. It's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the new scores and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's totally free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit if, this is a very big if, you use our promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we are back on Locker Room. We're going to finish things up, but first we wanted to very quickly remind you, if you want to get more analysis on the top prospects available in this year's NBA draft, and I know you do, I see the numbers that our podcasts do when we have draft people on, and they're very good. So you can do so with the Locked On NBA Draft podcast. Scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Follow the Locked On NBA Draft podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts.
And let's bring up our next speaker request is from DJ Hampton. DJ, welcome on, man. How's it going? I think, have you been in one of these before? Is this your first time?
This is my first time. I've been listening to the podcast for a while, though.
Oh, wow.
Oh, all thanks, right. DJ.
Really appreciate that. What do you want to talk about?
Okay. There's a few things I've noticed. Like, why late in games does everybody hate RJ Barrett? Like, I know when Randall gets tired, like, he gets tunnel vision. It's like, Tibbs gets tunnel vision. Like, it's like the entire, nobody sees RJ Barrett unless he's like, hey, give me the ball. And he has to try to go make a play over by itself. Look like, and the amount of poise that he has for a 20-year-old, like, you get one possession, turn the ball over. You get another possession, splash a three. At 20 years old, it's just unreal. Just the growth he shows every single game. Almost sometimes, like, in spite of the rest of the team.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is kind of crazy to see just how far along he's come. I actually thought that last night of all nights was kind of the first one where they sort of empowered him down the stretch of the game and said, you know what, like, even though, you know, Julius Randle has been the guy that's taken the big shots down the stretch and stuff like that, we're going to, you know, trust you to take these shots and set you up, put you in positions with the ball in your hand, you know, to try to win this game. And, like, he did a pretty damn good job, you know, of hitting the shots that he needed to hit to kind of keep the Knicks competitive in this game. And you know, ultimately it just didn't – it was too little too late on some of it and, you know, just wasn't quite what the Knicks needed to finish it off. But I don't know. I do agree. I do think that there's this weird thing where it seems like – especially when Mitch was still active, the Knicks would come out and it would be like first 10 minutes or, you know, maybe a little less in the game. You know, RJ would be coming out there. He would be running pick and roll with Mitch. He would connect with Mitch on like a lob or two and, you know, would shoot like one or two jumpers off of a pick and, you know, it just kind of get himself going and he'd have these really hot starts and so would Mitch. And then down the stretch, they would just kind of abandon that and just be like, okay, well, now it's time for Randall to have the ball and just, you know, ISO or, you know, try to get the matchup he wants and try to get his mid-range going to end the game and whatever. And it's not even just a Randle thing. It's just sort of like a team-wide thing that's been affecting them, where it seems like, and I don't know if this is a Tibbs directive or if Tibbs just kind of empowers the players too much or what, but down the stretch of games, it's like they just switch into ISO mode and abandon team ball, and it's been really damaging to them, particularly in these most recent games where it seems like, you know, they get a lead going into the fourth quarter or in the fourth quarter and then look at things and say, oh, you know, now we just need to protect this lead. It's like, it's kind of like in football, you know, when you get a team that gets a 10-point lead going into the fourth quarter and then says, all right, we're just going to run the ball. And then, you know, they hit a couple three and outs, and then all of a sudden the other team scores two touchdowns, and now that team's down. They had already basically switched into victory mode, you know, and then don't know how to pull themselves back up and go and win the game. So it's been disappointing for sure. You know, just ignoring RJ is only part of that. The other part is just kind of ignoring team concept offense, which, you know, relatedly is what tends to get RJ his looks, I think.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement, Alex. I was about to say, I don't really get why they never put in pick and roll in those situations. Generally, when you have you have two like sized guys, the concern with like having two of your stars run a pick and roll together is one, inevitably like the goal of running a pick and roll, usually like in modern basketball, is to get a switch, right? And if you run it with your two best guys, you're going to have the two best defenders switching. So you might not get an advantageous mismatch. But with RJ and Randle, usually you have people with two different body types guarding the two of them. So if you get Grant Williams and RJ, like in space, generally, maybe Grant Williams, give him credit, he did a great job on Randle the other night. But I think RJ is going to toast him if you give him like a spread floor to go and attack him. And that gets into another one of the issues. Like the big thing is that they keep having Elf out there, and it's why, I mean, you either need to have Quickly or you need to go with Burks being like the nominal point guard or just the fifth guy in with the starters, just so outside of the center, everyone has to be guarded. And if you're not going to do that, maybe you set a big, have a big come out and set a pick for RJ. There's a lot of different stuff you could do. Like you could do some of the dribble handoff action they run with Obi between Randle and RJ. Just in general, I'm kind of surprised that they don't involve Randle in more of a two-man game. I feel like Tibbs is just, I mean, he's like on top of all the minutes that Randle has played, I think people underestimate like just how high a degree of difficulty it is for him on a night-to-night basis. Where even some of the best players in the league, like Steph for years, and part of this is just because Steph is like one of the best off-ball players in NBA history, but he's getting open threes just by running through screens. Randle rarely gets open shots in the flow of the offense. It'll happen like twice a game. And down the stretch, to Alex's point, it just feels like Tibbs doubles down on that tendency when the defense is absolutely at its most locked in. And to me, that's when you got to go most the other direction and say, what do I have deep in my playbook that can help this guy the most to get an open shot? And like, I think it's a little different on the last possession of games, because obviously when there's a dwindling clock, the motivation to ISO is if you're swinging the ball around as the clock winds down, a defense can just say, all right, you only have 3 seconds. We're just going to run three guys at you. And if you pass the ball, no one else can shoot. But I'm talking more with like a minute to 2 minutes left. They just snap into ISO mode automatically. And it just doesn't really make sense to me. But DJ, do you have any final thoughts on all that?
Yes, I noticed that. Like, I also noticed that you took the words right out of my mouth. I don't think I can, like, one hand how many times I've seen RJ and Julius run a pick and roll when it seems like that should be their bread and butter. Other than, I don't really have much else. Thank you guys so much. Let's start a GoFundMe to get rid of Elfrid Payton or find out what he has on Tibbs, because it's something. And why he doesn't like RJ either. And I think it starts with him because he never passes RJ the ball. But, all right, you guys, all right,
thanks a lot,
day.
DJ. Do you want to tell people where they can find you on social media or anything, or are you good?
Oh, I'm on Twitter. Hemp is the champ on Twitter, and on Instagram, Hemp the champ.
Great.
Follow me. I follow back.
Awesome username. All right, thanks a lot, DJ. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, you got it. All right.
Hey, keep a name like that. I'm a follow DJ too.
I mean, that's a killer handle, man. I don't have any. My middle name is Holt, so I've considered going Holt in the name of Holt before. Just doesn't have the same ring to it as Hamp is the champ. All right, I'm gonna bring up David Almoner. David, you there, man?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, guys.
How's it going? David, did I get your last name right or did I butcher it?
Almanor, but...
Almanor. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll remember it for next time.
Yeah. Hey, guys. I was here last week and I was kind of talking about taking a first-round playoff series, but after last night, I kind of realized I've got a... In fact, I think most Knicks fans, we have to temper our expectations because from what I see now, we're either a play-in team or, like, we'll probably barely miss it. Because here's why. Like, we all knew from the start of the season, we were missing a playmaker. We're missing a second shot creator. We didn't expect Randle to be as good as he was. And now we're kind of seeing Randle's getting tired. We don't have the shot creator to close out certain games. And, you know, Peyton, I can talk all day about him. DJ brought up some good points about, I forgot what he said exactly, but we are who I thought we were in the beginning of the season. And I think, Knicks fans collectively, we have to temper our expectations and wherever we finish. And this season, I mean, this off season is going to be this is where the front office makes their money. How do you improve on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you to a degree. You know what I mean? Like, as far as the Knicks being who we thought they were at the beginning of the season, I do think that requires a little bit of reflection to the beginning of the season where, like, I mean, I guess it could depend on what you mean by beginning. But, like, if I think beginning, like, preseason, I thought there was a real chance the Knicks only win, like maybe hit the under on their 23.5 wins for the year. Which that was obviously foolish. They were clearly much better than that. And that was in large part due to Randle being so much better than we thought he was going to be. But, you know, once we sort of got the grasp for how good Randle could be and all that stuff. Yeah, I do think, you know, ultimately I think the Knicks are going to end up somewhere around 500. They might be a game below. They might be like one or two games above or whatever. But I will give them credit for at least it seems like they are able to put things together well enough when they sort of get the screws put to them as far as, you know, falling too far below 500 at this point. Like the fact that they're two games under 500 right now is kind of weird because they haven't been there in a while, you know, even with all the struggles, that they were having a few weeks ago. I think maybe the one Sixers game put them two games below, but then they rattled off a 3-game win streak after that. So hopefully we're, you know, on course for something like that now. I guess we'll see, but I think all in all, like, yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, I think an important thing as a fan for the rest of this season is just sort of to be happy with what you get, you know, like at least we have something substantial to root for now. It feels kind of nice to get mad, you know, at games again, but not for just like, oh my God, I can't believe they lost by 60 and David Fizdale was smiling on the sideline. Like mad, like, oh man, they were just about to beat another top seed in the conference in a game where they had a 10-point lead and couldn't hold on against one of the best teams in the league. You know, it's being mad for very different reasons. So I do agree, though, with your final point that this offseason will be sort of a check for the front office, which I would argue that this past offseason was as well. But now, you know, this coming offseason, it's going to be like, all right, do they play their cards properly? Do they make the right moves around the margins maybe to you know, create a more competitive team without sacrificing tons of future assets, without getting someone who can propel them legitimately into like contention. It's going to be a balancing act for this front office. And, you know, it'll be probably the first test this coming off season of like just how much faith Leon Rose has, as the president, how much like free rein he's given to do things his way and not have any oversight from Dolan or whatever. But, you know, as much as, like, I don't like really giving Dolan too much credit for anything, but the one thing that he has done with his last few presidents of basketball operations is he does let them cook for a while until things really hit the fan. And it's not until things are, like, dire after, you know, 3-4 years or whatever that he finally says, all right, I think your job's on the line. Fix it or you're fired. And we saw that sort of play out with Phil Jackson and then with Steve Mills also, who with Scott Perry got to sort of do things his way for a couple years. That obviously didn't work out. And now we're sort of there with Leon Rose, but this is working out really well. So I would argue that this year has probably bought Leon Rose at least another three to like execute his vision or whatever, without any interruption, particularly because of the relationship that he and Dolan had through CAA before he got hired. But yeah, I'll throw that to you, Gavin. I mean, what are your thoughts on the playoff picture and everything right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a well-timed question, David. This is kind of what I've been focused on, and like, I don't know, I don't have a game. My instinct is that this is a really unpopular opinion, but maybe more people agree with me than I think. I mean, I've said since the beginning of this year, like, I really, it's not going to break my heart if the Knicks either lose in the first play-in game or just miss it entirely. Like, obviously, like, in the moment, it'll suck, and like every individual loss feels bad, and I'm rooting for them, like, in the moment to win every game. But I really, I genuinely, for better or worse, I genuinely believe the best thing that can happen to the Knicks is that they somehow, I mean, they get in the lottery, and obviously that they move up a little bit. And I mean, granted, like, you can obviously mess up in the lottery. You can find a gem outside of the lottery. We saw that this year when the Knicks got a far better player at 25 than they got at 8. But it's still an odds game, right? And the higher pick you have, the better chance they have of getting a better player. And it reminds me of the situation that Phoenix was in last year, right? Where like a year ago, like they were very, very similar to the Knicks, where they were kind of a plucky team. Maybe a little bit better than expected, though. Before the bubble, they were essentially what everyone expected. Two really, really good young building blocks, including like Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. Obviously, the Knicks sort of have their equivalent in RJ Barrett and Julius Randle. But there wasn't necessarily like, and you could say they had a lot of assets and they had a lot of good young talent, but you didn't see an avenue where like, boy, that team is a year away from championship contention. And we saw them beat the Jazz last night. Now they look like they might be one of the two or three best teams in the NBA. That's how quickly it can turn. If you get internal development, which for the Suns was Devin Booker going up a level, DeAndre Ayton going up a level, Mikal Bridges going up a level, and you maximize all those assets that you have. And the Knicks, in some ways, have more than the Suns. They're going to have the most cap space in the league. They have those two first-round picks. The one area the Suns missed that I think could have put them over the top was if they had just nailed that 10th pick and took Tyrese Halliburton, I would say they would be the favorites for the NBA title right now, or at least right there with like Denver, LA, Brooklyn. But they didn't do that. And from the Knicks, I'm kind of taking the same tack. If everything goes well for you and you're able, whether it's this offseason or next offseason, to put a Chris Paul type guy in with the current talent, which the Knicks have the room to do and they have the market to attract that guy, all of a sudden you're kind of one move away and you're not in a situation where you're going to be picking high for the near future, which is why when you have that opportunity, I don't mind that they get the highest pick possible. It's just kind of on them to nail it because they're not going to have a top 10 pick for the next 5 to 10 years if things go well. And maybe that's not reality. Sometimes franchises that look like they're on an upswing fall backward. The NBA is weird, and nothing is definitive, but this offseason will define the Knicks' future for better or worse, and whether or not they make the playoffs, that's not really the light at the end of the tunnel for me. It's what they do this offseason, how they maximize those assets. But David, I'll throw it to you. Any final thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, I just remember DJ's point, how we kind of hate on RJ. I didn't expect this season from RJ. My point is, we're getting an all-world season from Randall. We're getting a great season from RJ, a step up. Imagine if they level up next season with another good piece, a young piece from the draft, or maybe Alonzo, or somehow we get Jalen Brunson. We're in a position to be optimistic, I guess. And I just want to just relay that before we all start setting fires and jumping ship. But thank you guys for letting me
know. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll just say on that last point, like, for sure, I'm nothing but happy no matter what the outcome of the season is, because no matter what, even if the Knicks, you know, like what Gavin was saying, if the Knicks would narrowly miss the play-in or lose out in the play-in or whatever the case and end up in the lottery, then all you have to tell me is, okay, well, now the Knicks get another, you know, lottery pick to add to this core that just almost made, you know, the playoffs in a really competitive East this year. That's pretty solid to me, man. I'm not complaining one bit about that. And, you know, I would be totally on board for whatever happens the rest of this year. Like, I think the future is bright. You know, I think the big lesson that we could take away potentially if the Knicks falter down the stretch, and it seems like it's because, you know, like Randall and RJ kind of seem tired or whatever, is like, okay, this is why we need more talent, because you need to be able to give these guys more rest. You can't have everything fall apart every time Randall leaves the game or RJ leaves the game or whatever. And, you know, the Knicks will have plenty of avenues to do that this year as far as, you know, free agency, the draft. They're going to have three picks no matter what in the top, like, 35 probably, because I can't see the Pistons finishing with any better or worse or whatever than the fifth lottery odds, which would be the 35th pick in the second round. You know, I think the Knicks are in good shape no matter what, you know, and they'll have plenty of assets to trade for someone if they want to. If the right deal comes along, they'll have plenty to just kind of draft guys that, you know, hopefully will be really good. You know, this regime's basically one for two so far, at least on the surface, although Obi's been showing some improvement lately. So, you know, that's still kind of an incomplete grade, but I think we can definitely say that the Quickly pick was knocked out of the park. So there's going to be plenty of avenues to get better, and I have faith that these guys can figure it out.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement. Lots of reasons for optimism. David, thanks again for joining us.
All right, guys, that's it for this episode. We ran a little bit long, and you might have caught on. We have a tendency to do that. But we will have a bonus edition of Fan Friday, final 15, 20 minutes for all of you, getting into the aesthetics of RJ Barrett, why he's underappreciated across the league, whether it is more to do with like his individual game or just sort of the team context, and just how weird that is for a young star on the New York Knicks of all places and teams. And then we finish up talking about a crazy hypothetical. Would we trade Julius Randle for a top 3 to 5 pick in next year's draft? All that and more next time on Locked On Knicks. And we wanted to remind all of you, we're doing these locker rooms once a week, every week. We've been very consistent about that. I think we're trending more and more towards doing them Thursdays at 5:30. Today was the biggest room we ever had. I think in total we had about 15 people in there. A bunch of them came up and talked, got to share their opinions. And if you've come on, you know we don't cut anyone out. Everyone makes the episode the next day, so it's kind of a cool chance to be on the podcast and in a way to become a regular on the podcast and to actually get to participate. Even if you don't want to ask a question, I think everyone can vouch for it. Everyone seems to have a lot of fun doing it. So we'd love for you guys to join us on Locker Room next week. But until next time, Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, we'll be back soon. Peace out.